Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast. Every week, we talk with top senior executives to get their advice on positively impacting frontline employees, companies, and customers. On today's episode, not just Mow and Blow, I talked to Jackie Ishimaro Gacina, owner of Gacina Landscape Management, one of the most awarded landscape companies in the Bay Area. Jackie shares the incredible challenge of taking over the business when her husband passed, creating a strong culture and winning mentality at the front lines tied to tangible reward, what she's most passionate about now, and much more. Don't go anywhere. The Frontline Industry Podcast starts right now. Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast. My name is Joel, and joining me today is Jackie Ishimaro Gacina, owner of Gacina Landscape Management. They employ just under 400 team members out of multiple branch locations across the greater San Francisco Bay Area, and they're one of the most awarded landscape companies in the Bay Area. The Gacina Way, their driving core values are respect everyone, extend courtesy and politeness, and be a professional in action and appearance. Jackie, welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast.
Thank you very much, Joel.
I'm so thrilled that you're here with me today, and I know we had a chance to get to know each other a few weeks back as we were kind of vetting out the fit, and if you were interested in being part of this podcast, I'm glad you said yes. And a lot of the conversation that we had at that point really has stuck with me around your cultural values and the way you care for your people and your passion for a lot of different things. And so I'd love for you just to give us kind of a high-level, fast version of your story. It's a really unique story, how you got into the industry, and I think our listeners would resonate with it just in a brief few moments.
Okay. In December of 2015, my husband passed away after his prostate cancer returned. So January of 2016, I took over. There was a general manager in place who was the succession plan. But within a short period of time, I realized that we had different ideas of the future and where the company was going. So within 1 month, he tendered his resignation, which was shocking. And so at that point, I not only owned the company, but I was going to run the company. And so I called the management team together. He made his announcement that, for his resignation. And then we sat and talked. And of course, the biggest question that they had on their mind was, who's going to run the company? And what are you going to do with the company? Are you going to sell it? That was the biggest fear of everybody there. So I explained to him that I would be looking for a general manager, but for the size of our company and the experience that I wanted, it was not going to be an easy search. It would probably be, you know, up to a year, and that I was not looking at selling the company, even though that would have been the easiest thing for me to do. And I wasn't looking at taking on equity money. We were financially sound, you know, very little debt. And so there was no reason for that. So, and I asked them to please give me a chance to stay with me, to stay with the company, and let me show them what I could do. And I was quite frank with them. I told them that if there was a mass exodus, that then I would have to sell the company. And so gratefully, they all stayed. To this day, that is the biggest, you know, reason for Gacina still being around, is because they gave me the shot and they worked as a team with me to not only maintain the company, but actually grow it and make it better than what it was 6 years ago. And I am eternally grateful to them.
Wow.
And I think the reason why that was because my husband created such a strong company culture before it was a buzzword. And that's why they gave me a chance. I think because of their loyalty to him and because it was the Gacina name. And so it worked out for all of us, I believe.
Well, certainly it seems to. I mean, you have been on boards and panels and even recognized for multiple awards yourself as a leader, and you continue to put yourself out there and fight for the causes and the beliefs and the values that you espouse. I'm just wondering, you know, if you look back in time, it hasn't been that long since these decisions were made. How did you feel a sense of conviction that like this was for sure going to work? Or was there a certain trepidation that I'm not sure in stepping into this role that I can do this? I mean, how did you decide to ultimately do that? And what kind of confidence did you have going in?
Well, it was a certain amount of bluffing in the beginning. You know, in the back of my mind, I always figure that I'm a person that wants a yes, I don't want a no, and that I will jump in, you know, wholeheartedly and work my hardest to make something happen and not to give up. But I have had, up until probably about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, having that imposter syndrome feeling, you know, that I lucked into this and why me and why all that. And then if I look back now as to what we've accomplished, I'm doing pretty well because of the support of my team. And I think that we are a stronger company than we were before. Obviously, I have a different way of doing things from my husband. I have heard one criticism that I'm not as fun as him, which I would agree. He was definitely, you know, charismatic and the fun guy. But what I think I'm bringing to the company is more stability and greater and more equitable reward to everybody. And, you know, we're on a good path as far as profitability and sustainability for the company and how we practice the landscape.
Well, it certainly is a really neat testimony to your beliefs and your work ethic, because I can't imagine coming in and having that sort of pressure. It would be easy. It'd be the easy way out, as I think you've kind of mentioned, to just sell the company and be done with it.
Definitely.
And I wonder how much pressure you were getting from others outside, maybe within your family or your network, to just like, you know what, you're not ready for this. You can't do it. Did you feel that? Or were you just kind of surrounded by those who were like, Jackie, you've got this. Like, you totally can do this.
That's, I guess, how you figure out who your friends are. There were a number of John's friends that stepped up, called me, you know, told me whatever you need, talk to me. I'm there for you. You know, I can be a mentor for you, you know, bounce ideas off of you. John had, before he passed, hired a financial consultant that was from a major competitor, and he has been my rock. He, Quan Trinh, he has been with me. You know, I remember when the general manager gave his notice, Quan and I went out into the parking lot and for probably 2 hours talked about, you know, calming me down, talking to me about, you know, I've got this and that he was going to support me. And, you know, so that has helped a lot. Of course, I had a lot of companies that were contacting me, calling me, from my competitors to equity companies to consultants. You know, we've got money for you. We will help you. We'll support you. We'll buy your company. We'll, you know, pay top dollar for it. All of that. And I still get that, you know, not as much as I used to. It's probably like one a week at least. I have some equity company that, you know, can help me through this whole thing. And of course, I continue to turn that down. So it's not as much, because I think in the industry, they know that I'm not selling and I'm not looking at taking any equity money on.
You know, you mentioned John, and he was the fun one. And he was, you know, from what I read online, just a gregarious guy, but he really advocated strongly for your employees. And I read some stuff about him, you know, often giving cash to cover car payments or unexpected medical bills, giving them back their jobs after they had been fired or left on their own. You just don't hear that stuff, you know, very often. You kind of, maybe it's happening, you don't hear about it enough, but it seemed awfully special. And you mentioned that he had figured out some of this culture, strong culture stuff before it was a buzzword, as he called it. And I wonder how you're keeping that culture alive today, vibrant today in your own way. What are some of the ways that Kachina treats its employees maybe differently than competitors or others in the industry?
So one of the first issues that came up in the company was, for everyone, our weakness was accountability. So we ended up going with Franklin Covey. The entire management team and corporate went through the training for the Speed of Trust. And we really started to embrace the, 13 principles that are trained in the speed of trust. And so we don't hear anymore that accountability is a weakness for us. We've sort of overcome that. And so continuing that, Gacina, the foundation, for, one of the foundations for Gacina and why it was started was to give employees the opportunity to come and work for a company and then to be able to be trained and promoted so that they don't have to leave the company in order to get new personal challenges and also in order to make, you know, a better living wage and a salary. And so that continues in Gacina today that we have training for every new employee that comes in at the field. They go through a 2-month training so that they understand how Gacina does things in the field so that when they are joining a crew and a team, the senior crew leader or crew leader doesn't have to worry about training that people. They have a person that is actually contributing and impacting the work on the team. So they're not like a, you know, burden. And then, we looked at where we had gaps in filling open positions. And one of them was the leap from like senior crew leader to associate account manager was too great. And so we're building a bench now by seeing that maybe a senior crew leader is very good. He's smart. He could learn, you know, the financial aspect of it, but he needs help. So then we added in another step in the ladder as a production supervisor. So that person, you know, has more responsibility, more crews that he's overseeing, and more overseeing a larger team. And then we start working with them on how to professionally respond to clients through emails, how to look at your teams and make sure that they're efficient and how they're efficient, looking at how safety impacts, you know, the bottom line and how you can impact that through your individual contributions as a production supervisor. And then we added in an associate account manager now. So they're normally candidates that come in from college that have never had supervisory or management position. And so we work in training them with a smaller book of business, having a mentor, and then building that book of business and building their responsibility until they're promoted to an account manager. Then we have an account manager to a senior account manager was adding in. And then now we have an associate branch manager to senior branch manager. And then I did open up a new position as a director of operations in 2018. And then open another new position of director of strategy and impact. So all the way along the ladder, we've added in additional rungs so that we're helping people grow themselves and giving them support so that they'll be successful. It doesn't work if you promote somebody and then you let them go and, you know, they're supposed to figure it out on their own. So we're trying to make it so that they have support all the way along the way. And then we also now have opened up a new additional position that will probably start in the first quarter of next year, is an in-house trainer. So first he'll start with the field operations, and then we envision in him, you know, going further into account managers and building a bench and then helping people be successful at every level of the rung through middle management.
You certainly have invested a lot of time and effort and even money for sure into creating these opportunities. And I think it's really remarkable that you've invested that sort of time and effort. I mean, it's really difficult, I think, to change the way we've always kind of done things. And mm-hmm. even when we know it's maybe the best way to do it. With that additional creation of rungs in the ladder, as you say, can come the challenge of the dilution of message from the top. Right? Mm-hmm. That you have a vision, a mission, something you're trying to convey, and suddenly it gets kind of sifted through multiple clay layers of, mm-hmm. of management where it gets diluted, or there's a game of telephone by the time it gets to the front line of what you really want to connect with your frontline associates to have them know or feel or be focused on a daily basis. How are you mitigating that amidst this increase of middle management then? Do you have a way that you stay connected deeply to the front lines? Do you have a way of communicating to them consistently? Walk me through kind of your mindset around that.
Okay, so I need a little bit more clarification. So do you mean myself personally, or do you mean through management through to operations and the hourly staff.
Yeah, I guess I'm asking, basically, how do you ensure that your vision as owner, Jackie, is still held dear by the front lines and communicate deeply to them when now there's maybe more people between you and them to have that information get through?
Okay. So I use my director of operations as my conduit to operations. So the director of operations has five branch managers underneath him. And ever since I came in 2016, the branch managers were invited and responsible for the strategic planning. Before, it used to be my husband, a consultant, the director of finance, and the director of HR that used to figure out what next year's budget and numbers were for a branch, and they just basically hand it to them and then have the branch figure out how to make those numbers work. I didn't like that. I wanted more transparency. So at the strategic planning meetings, the branch managers are included in addition to the associate branch managers, and they create their budgets so that they have skin in the game. They know what they need to achieve, and they make it realistic with a slight push in there. And so each one of the branches runs as almost like a separate company. They have a separate P&L. They have overhead allocations from corporate, and they run their branches like a mini company. And so whatever is coming from the top down, it's their responsibility to make sure it goes through, because it's going to help them achieve their overall goals for the branch. And then another thing that I changed when I first came in was, instead of having we had one branch that was a silo. It was always a double-digit net profit company and did very, very well. But the branch manager there had the silo mentality that as long as he took care of his branch, things were good. So I worked with him to understand that he needs to be global Gacina, which means that whatever he does, he needs to train and help and advise his colleagues to become just as good as he is. Because if he brings up everybody in the branch, we bring all of us up. And so there is more communication and more mentorship and support through all levels, because if one of us succeeds, they can only succeed if all of us succeed. And so that was big in the company. I don't want individual successes. I want company successes. So 2 years ago, I think it was, we, instead of the bonuses for your branch being based on just your salary, that was, to me, a disincentive for people to do their best. So then we came up with metrics for the entire branch to meet metrics, and it was based on your efforts. Then we unwound that and decided that we would have quarterly bonuses so that each individual contributor at the management level in the branch could have some sort of say in their destiny, right? So they have, I think, up to about 3,000 additional each quarter to make in bonuses. And now we're trying to figure out how we can turn that out to the hourly employees also, so that they can make a difference in, you know, their contributions to the company, and that it directly affects them. So it's a process.
That's so fantastic to hear. Yeah. So I'm sorry, go ahead. I interrupted you.
No. So I'm just saying that, you know, you think about things. I dream about stuff at night. You know, we joke around that 3:30 seems to be my time to come up with these ideas and stuff. But what I learned is that I'm not normally a patient person. So I've had to adapt to become a patient and to see that there's little steps that get me to where my vision is, but they are steps. And so I just have to be patient. And if I keep on talking about the same message and how it's a win for everybody, if we do this together, then it'll work. So one of the first concepts that I emphasized to the team and the company was Kaizen, which is continuous improvement. And so that is, you know, one of our core values now is continuous improvement, and that I am open to people coming up with ideas that will help us in that continuous improvement. So it's not just training. It's not just, there's no box in what continuous improvement is. It could be at any level. You know, the hourly guys can come up with it. Middle management, senior management could come up with, a continuous improvement. And so, one of the first ones was our safety record was not good. I take responsibility. I took my eye off the ball. And one of the branch managers came to me and said, hey, we need to have safety fairs again, like we used to have safety fairs. They were successful. So I said, roll it out to your branch. Let's see how it works. It was a complete success. His branch was phenomenal as far as bringing down their safety numbers. So the next year we rolled it out to all the branches. And so we have gone down over 30 points in our mod because it is a company-wide safety awareness for everybody. And then just a couple months ago, one of our branch managers who's been successful in creating an estates department. So he came to me with an idea that estates is different than commercial, partner with a client is different. Field maintains the property is different, and it's a different training program. So we hired a new estates manager, account manager, and she is a current student at our local community college, and she understands what the difference is in estates, and so she's starting to train her field team in that way, and we feel that we're going to grow that business because of his idea and what he recognized as an opportunity in a new service line for his branch and possibly for a couple other branches.
It's really neat what you're doing. And I want to circle back to the continuous improvement side real quick, just because I think it's so noteworthy. I've worked with a lot of frontline teams throughout my career, and more often than not, it is absolutely the case that the best ideas to improve the organization come from the front lines. The ones who do it every single day, who see the problems and they have ideas, but they don't always have a strong platform or path to making those ideas known. Mm-hmm. So they keep them to themselves. Like, it's not my job. You know, my boss will tell me if there's a better way he wants me to do it or she wants me to do it or whatever it may be. And it's really cool that you're really putting a new focus on that, creating those opportunities to collect those ideas from the various elements of various layers of the organization. From what I've seen work really well when it comes to frontline KPIs, you mentioned kind of how do we push this down to their level so they can kind of own it, right? That's what you're really doing, is developing an ownership mentality across your organization. Is, you know, how can we take the obsession, whatever the thing is that Jackie is trying to accomplish for our organization, that all the management team are trying, that are aligned along with as well, and put that in words and in a framework the frontline associates can understand and adopt and say, I want that too, but I also see a direct path to me controlling that outcome, right? And that's the hardest part, is like, how do I, trimming this tree, mowing this lawn, connect with that obsession that I can now control, and how do I know if I'm winning or losing in real time against that KPI? That's really tough. And I've a whole host of ideas I'll bring up to you one day maybe, but see if they resonate for you in your world. But I'm just really excited to hear that that's what you're doing, because it's not done enough. Too many middle managers and too many executives feel the burden of having to figure all of it out and then kind of trickle it down the organization versus lift up the lower levels of the organization and elevate them to a position of owning their daily lives.
So part of it, I believe, has to do with culture also, that your team needs to feel safe, that if they come up with an idea or a better way to do something or something that's not right, they have to feel that they're safe, that there won't be retaliation against them, and that they're protected by coming forward. So for us, you know, over the 6 years that I've been with the company, we had an employee that stepped up to say, you know, his team members were drinking on the job. And we never would have known that if he didn't come forward. or somebody is, you know, taking advantage of the company, they're not on the job all the time, you know, have a talk with that person. We need them to be a team member and really be contributing. And it really is creating that safe culture mm-hmm. for people in the company to be able to do that. And I, when I first took over the company, I used to ask a lot of questions of the management team, and they were reticent about giving me answers. And then once I dug down to find out why, it's because they felt that I was questioning their integrity and they're questioning their cred. And I said, no, the opposite is true. I'm asking you questions because I know what I don't know. You don't know what I know, but I know what I don't know. So the fastest way for me to learn is by asking you the questions so that I get taught as fast as possible so that I get up to speed running this company. Mm-hmm. And I can only do it because you're the subject expert. John hired you because you're a subject expert. Now I need you to teach me. And I need you to not think I'm questioning you because I'm criticizing you or anything. I'm questioning you because you're the expert that's going to get me up to speed as fast as possible. So that was a huge sort of cultural change in people in the company.
Well said. I mean, there are five things in summary that I've always felt are really important for building a strong culture. And it started with purpose. What are we all about? And mm-hmm. and of course, what are you all about as an employee? Like, I can't bring you along on this journey unless I know what motivates you and mm-hmm. what you're all about on a daily level.
Right.
And then it's what you just said, it's safety. How do we create a safe place where you can then, the third thing, be vulnerable? And vulnerability mm-hmm. always has to be exuded at the top from you, of course, Jackie, and going, I don't know it all. I need to understand. I need to learn. I don't have it all figured out. But because I don't have it all figured out, it also gives you permission, you know, manager or frontline associate, to also not have it all figured out and to be mm-hmm. figuring it out together as a team, a one team mentality. So if we're purposeful, we're safe, we're vulnerable with each other, then how out of that comes an opportunity to really be autonomous in our roles, right? To really own it and have mastery, because now I feel confident with what I can do. And lastly, as a manager, then you're creating the opportunity to remove the barriers that stand in the way of your team's success more systematically, mm-hmm. more daily, with that continuous improvement mindset. And it's just, you're exuding all those things that I'm so passionate about. And it's really cool to hear them in your own words. I guess, you know, recognizing that, you know, you have a lot of things on your plate today. I don't want to take too much more of your time, but what are some things you're most passionate about now, Jackie, as you have now been at the helm of your company for several years? You're moving, you know, dramatically down the direction that you want your company to go, even if it is steps at a time, you're making your way there. What are things that are now on your mind and you're passionate about at a daily level?
So originally for me, it was continuing John's legacy to honor my husband. He is a very well-known person in the green industry. I still have to this day people that come up to me and say, hey, I knew your husband. I'm very sorry. You know, he was a great guy. I still have that. And so creating that legacy, but also I have two sons and they're in the business now. And so hopefully we're giving them the training and support that they need that eventually they'll take over the business. And because John succumbed to prostate cancer, that's another passion for me, was first educating our team, because you figure, what is it? I don't know, 92% or whatever in the green industry are men. And so prostate cancer is the most common cancer that men will contract. And it is not talked about. You know, to me, a PSA, prostate-specific antigen test should be as common and as expected of every man the same way a mammogram is for a woman. And what I found out when I started educating my own company and team members is that, you know, there were assumptions about, you know, the testing, assumptions that were all wrong, that were barriers for people, you know, feeling uncomfortable, not wanting to talk about it, not wanting to get tested. And it's a simple blood test. So it's breaking down those barriers through education. And basically, and what I found out too, is I have an individual that was translating my PowerPoint to the employees into Spanish. And when he was reading over, you know, the data that I was going to give out, he's like, he gave me from his cultural perspective as a Latino, what the obstacles were. And so I changed my PowerPoint presentation because of the input that he gave me. Again, listening to somebody that has, you know, real life experience, a cultural experience, knowing what the barriers are, and then incorporating that into my message, which made it better. And then the other thing, probably in 2017, I think, we became a certified women-owned and minority-owned company, which at the time, and still, there's not a lot of women-owned companies in the landscape business at our size. But now we're just starting to see the effects of that, where companies are making that part of their mission is to, you know, work with companies that have diversity. So that's starting to move the needle. Again, I had to be patient on that, but moving the needle on that. And then I'm trying to think of what else. You know, just continuing to look at how we can improve who I think our number one client is our interior clients, our employees. And they, you know, probably 35 years ago when John started the business, and even like 20 years ago, employees were looked at as a liability, not an asset. That also, the tide has changed, and employees are now looking at assets, and particularly in this short labor shortage that we have, you know, how we can change that so that you don't have a labor shortage, and how you're able to hire employees and keep them. So those are the passions that I have now, and will continue. We can always get better at how we treat our employees and each other. And, you know, I'm looking at more than likely next year to again roll out the training for the speed of trust, because I think maybe we've sort of forgotten a little bit of that. And I think that COVID didn't help, you know, your camaraderie and team and working together, because we were remote and we're still sort of semi-remote. I don't micromanage. And so if people get their jobs done and they take a day to work at home on their paperwork or whatever, I'm good with that, as long as, you know, we're functioning, which we are, right, and things are good. So, you know, good and bad. It's good that I'm not a micromanager. Sometimes it's bad. I am late to the table to make corrections because I, you know, don't micromanage. It takes me a little bit longer to find things out. But in the long run, and the, you know, goal of the company, I think it's working.
Well, it certainly seems to be from the outside and from my perspective. You know, I hear you say, and it's such a great perspective, that you want to carry on your husband's the honor of his legacy and the name and recognition that he had brought. But it sounds like you're paving your own way too now, in a really unique and powerful way. And the initiatives you're taking, I'm just so encouraged by. And I say that because, you know, I get surrounded by a lot of organizations with frontline team members, and it's just remarkable and sad how few of them have your perspective and are investing the sort of time and real mental energy around how do we create a better place for them, because they are the greatest assets. They're not liabilities. And I think COVID proved that pretty quickly, and the Great Resignation proved that pretty quickly, that we really can't operate without them. And I'm just so encouraged by what you're doing, and thank you for it, because I think what I'm noticing in you is this like big picture purpose way up here, which is you're just trying to make the world a better place around you and lead by example and live out your own values. And that happens to be in a landscaping business, but those things transcend all those kind of business related topics. And it's just who you are. And I love that.
And I guess the other thing that I would want to add in there, and it's sort of a little bit of a plug, I guess, is for Rescape California, that they have 8 principles that they teach, which all of our managers and corporate team has taken the training, that it's the 8 principles of regenerative landscaping. So we are in the green industry, and as a landscape company, we are in the unique position to hit all of STEAM. So it's science, technology, engineering, agriculture, and is it mechanics or math. I don't know. I can't remember. But, you know, we are in an industry that was that is looked about at and is still considered low on technology. And I think that's changing. You know, the stuff that's in the news is the robotic mowers, which is not us because it's more geared towards residential, in my opinion. But if you look at what's going on in the state of California, which is difficult, is by 2024, we're supposed to be all electrics on tools, even though the technology is not there for commercial. Yeah. And then by 2035, we're supposed to be totally electric as far as vehicles. And there's not the capacity in batteries yet. I'm sure the technology will grow, but they don't have, you know, commercial work trucks that will work for me at a reasonable price. But we as an industry, you know, we're looking at how to expand people coming into our industry. And it's like, it's not just a, you know, uneducated mow and blow guy that has a high school education. Well, I mean, honestly, that has a high school education. That's, you know, and I mean, we even have some clients that say, what skills, you know, why are you so expensive? What, you know, it doesn't take a lot of skills to be, you know, a landscaper. It's like, well, let me talk to you. Let me tell you how it's changed. And it, you know, we can take people from college or people that are not from college that are, you know, bootstraps and they've learned on their own and they have a passion for, you know, contributing hopefully to the health of the planet, that there's going to be a planet left for us, you know, in 50 years. And so hopefully the image of the landscaper is not the mow and blow guy. You know, it's a sophisticated industry. We're running a, you know, profitable business, and we're firing the same way that all companies, technology companies, whatever you want, you know, whatever company you want to talk about, we do it here at Kachina. And we're not unsophisticated. We are a sophisticated company. And but we have the added part is we could make a difference for the planet.
Yeah, I mean, the service industry as a whole is getting a wake-up call that these are not the easiest jobs, actually. And and yeah, it's not just mow and blow. And in a world now where customer experience, customer service, attention to detail, personalized experience are now premiums in delivering those sort of outcomes, you can't just have anyone walk off the street and do these jobs. It requires a serious amount of training, like the 2 months that you provide up front, but also the ongoing training and support to ensure that persists and is sustainable. One last question for you before I let you go. And I know we could talk forever, and I really, really enjoyed this discussion with you today. But what's something, Jackie, that you believe that if everyone else believed too would make this world a better place, in your opinion?
If we would treat each other with respect and believe that all of us are equal.
Simple, but powerful. Yeah, no explanation needed. I think that's a great way to finish this podcast. And I can't thank you enough for spending time with me. I know you have a lot of things on your plate and a lot of commitments, but it's just an honor to speak with you today. And I'm excited for what's in the future for you guys and for the industry. And I hope that we can stay in touch because I'd love to see your story continue to unfold.
Thank you. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to have a platform to talk about the passions that I have and how we'd like to make a difference. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Jackie. Well, for those listening, I hope you feel similarly inspired and you leave today feeling like you can go out there and tackle your world, whether it's landscaping or restaurants or a hotel or a hospital, that you can make a difference. You can respect others around you, and the ripple effect of those decisions can really be incredible to see. Thank you for listening to the Frontline Industry Podcast, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Unison. Put your best team everywhere and create the best culture that attracts the best people. Jackie's a wonderful example of what can happen when you rise to the challenge of leadership in crisis. And if you found her story encouraging, I know many others will too. Great people just seem to know great people. So would you click the share button and send this podcast to somebody great that you know? Don't forget, also, subscribe so you don't miss a single episode coming up. There's some good ones. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.